What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype Podcast, wishing you and yours a happy new year. Now that 2021 is finally here, it's time for some New Year's resolutions and some things to keep an eye on for all 30 NBA teams with the calendar flipping to 2021. So with that in mind, I wanted to welcome in my next guest, a colleague of USA Today, NBA writer Mark Medina, who covers the league nationally, and he's going to help me break down what's to come for each team in 2021. Mark, how you doing?
Michael, I'm doing well. I mean, the 2020 and now 2021 caveats aside, I'm good, healthy, working, and it's cool to be on the pod. Big fan.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you. And you know, certainly, as you said, given everything that's going on in the world, we're both lucky right now and in great position. So I don't take that for granted. And, you know, looking ahead towards 2021 now, we got a lot to get into with all 30 teams. So, you know, I figured I'd do it kind of alphabetized, just go down the list and rapid fire. And the first team we look at, the Atlanta Hawks, who thus far, after the additions of Danilo Gallinari, Rajon Rondo, with that young core of Trae Young and John Collins, and I also can't forget about Bogdan Bogdanovic, they're looking pretty good to start the season. For me, when I look at them for this calendar year, I think one of the things that they're going to have to do eventually is extend Lloyd Pierce's contract. We've seen him have a chance with an improved roster. We're going to find out how good of a coach he really is. And thus far, he's been certainly up to the task, and they've looked like a playoff team on paper.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that he is going to be with the Hawks long term. Now, the timing of his extension, I could see that playing out just to allow things to play out organically. But I've heard nothing but good things with how the Hawks view Lloyd Pierce. You know, obviously, they're well aware that the last few years it was about developing young guys and also improving the talent. So, you know, I think here moving forward, it's not a criticism of Lloyd Pierce, but it's, you know, how do you manage better talent? Can they upgrade the team's defensive performances? They never lacked for scoring punch, but they lacked with defensive consistency. But I think so far it is early, but they're off to a good start. And I think that, you know, all the stars are aligned for the Hawks to make the playoffs. I don't think the expectations are anything beyond that. Of course, like with every team, they want to go far. But I think that they would constitute a successful season if they get to the playoffs as a 6th, 7th, or 8th seed, you know, just get to the first round. And, you know, anything else after that is house money. And I think Lloyd Pierce is the guy to do it.
I agree. And in talking with John Collins previously for a podcast as well, he and Trae Young were both chomping at the bit to get to the playoffs. And especially for Trae, looking at a guy like Luka Doncic and the early success he had and being compared to him, you know that he wants to win and put his stamp. We've seen the kid put up a ton of stats. Now it's time to go add some W's to that column as well. I agree with you there. I think for Lloyd, looking ahead, you know, whether it's picking up his option and then trying to extend him long term, I think whether they do both, in a sense, Lloyd Pierce is the guy for them. He's been great in that community as well, especially with all the social justice stuff and injustice stuff that he's been promoting as well in that area. So he and Travis Schlenk came in together, and I expect them to continue that bond going forward. Switching now, staying in the East, but to the next team, Boston Celtics. For me, we know that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have taken leaps forward. I think the X factor for them now, losing Gordon Hayward in free agency, is they're going to need Kemba Walker to stay healthier going for the rest of the season and to really make that next step in the playoffs. He went there to try to get to a championship and compete for a championship with the Celtics after years with the Charlotte Hornets. Kemba Walker's knee is going to be a huge determining factor for me when I look at Boston going into 2021. I think that's got to be their resolution, keep him healthy.
Yeah, and you know, that might be a tough resolution. A lot of people make these resolutions at this time of year of having better health, and then all of a sudden it they're not able to withstand the discipline of a good diet and getting back in the gym. And here, you know, I know Brad Stevens had said earlier that, you know, the earliest he could return is early January, but that's, I think, you know, the most optimistic projections. This is just when he's getting reevaluated. And when you're looking at this last year, it hasn't been good. I mean, the thing that really, you know, left me concerned about him was the fact that they had such a long layoff during, you know, that time when the NBA suspended the season because of the pandemic and then had the season restart. And all of a sudden he's dealing with injuries again and lean load management, even with all that time off. And so, you know, I know that he had a stem cell injection during the off season and they're going to take his time, but I can't help but wonder, you know, is this going to be a continued pattern of what's going on? And so, you know, that's certainly the top of the list of the resolution, but, you know, in the worst case scenario, if they're not getting a fully healthy Kemba Walker, are there ways to offset that? And when I'm looking at, you know, the Celtics and their run in the playoffs, you know, falling short against the Miami Heat, I think that there are ways for, you know, Jason Tatum to be more consistent at the end of games, and Marcus Smart, you know, he's kind of feast or famine with his outside shooting. But I think at the same time, it goes back to your point that, you know, if Kemba Walker is not healthy, they're losing substantial talent, and they're losing, you know, part of what makes the Celtics distinguishable, having a lot of youthful depth.
And in talking with execs around the league, you know, when it was closer towards the draft, you would hear Kemba's name getting floated out there and some trade discussions. And, you know, anytime you just get a guy and his name is out there in trade talks, it makes you wonder what the team knows about the guy's health, and that it would be such a potentially quick turnaround to move a guy like that. Personally, I think Kemba's shot creation ability also would take pressure off of a guy like Tatum, and he's a clutch guy. They call him Cardiac Kemba for a reason. I know last year he got a little bit of criticism in the playoffs for some performances, but to me, a healthy Kemba Walker could be the difference between Boston going up against Philly and the other teams in the East that are, you know, Brooklyn as well, that are trying to compete to be the last team standing in the East. So we'll see if it happens. But as I touched on, I mentioned Brooklyn is one of those teams that is trying to compete for a title. And, you know, it's great to see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving back healthy, both playing at all-star level, their superstar selves. It's wonderful to see. These guys couldn't clean the glass if they had Windex, okay? They've struggled mightily when it comes to rebounding the ball. And if you're going to be a championship caliber team, you have to play well on the defensive end of the ball. And I know DeAndre Jordan can get rebounds and Jared Allen, but to me, as much as I look on paper and love the star power they have with that 1-2 punch of KD and Kyrie, and Caris LeVert can also be, you know, as Steve Nash calls him, the Manu Ginobili off the bench. But to me, they've got to either acquire a rebounder or figure it out within to clean that glass. It's not like you could just spray some Windex on here.
Yeah, well, if I had to guess, I think it's going to be more about improving from within. I think Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan are completely capable rebounders. And, you know, the idea of them making a deal, I think there is a fine line of, okay, they've spent some time establishing continuity and having good rotations down. And I don't, you know, I think that there's a danger of disrupting that, especially when you have, you know, some new pieces with Kevin and Kyrie coming off major injuries and not knowing to what extent could that come back to be an issue. You know, so far they've been pretty good, but they've had a recent stretch of games that they lost, and you look at, you know, three of them, it's all partly because they're out rebounded. And when I'm looking at the teams, they could easily out rebound all those teams against Atlanta, against Memphis, against Charlotte, given the personnel that they have. So I think it really just comes down to the hustle and the grit and chipping away at that.
And, you know, one other thing you mentioned, too, that it's also earlier in the season. And Kyrie the other night said that, you know, he's not going to get frustrated over these first couple of games. And he said, quote, "The object of this regular season is to continue to get better and to prepare for the 16 wins in the playoffs." I certainly agree with Kyrie's sentiment there. And, you know, he touched on, he knew that this was a process coming here, and that to get to change the culture from a team that was a really good, surprising team, you know, with that D'Angelo Russell group that got the sixth seed and played well, in my opinion, overachieved, to, okay, now you got two elite stars and you're trying to take that next step to be a championship contender. It almost reminds me in a way of the Philadelphia 76ers when, you know, there was a thought that if, you know, Kawhi Leonard's shot didn't fall in, that, hey, maybe they could have been a finals contender that year when they got the shooting with Redick and some of those other guys there as well. So for the Nets, certainly, as we touched on, I think if they can clean up the glass and keep Durant and Kyrie healthy, they'll be a finals contender for the Eastern Conference just based on that talent alone. But we touched on a really superstar guy in Kyrie at the point guard position. Moving on to the next team, the Charlotte Hornets have a guy that potentially could be a star in the league, LaMelo Ball. And for me, in talking recently with execs and scouts on him, I found some interesting comparisons for him as we look towards the Hornets in 2021. For me, it's about just how far can LaMelo Ball go? What is his ceiling? You know, some scouts and executives I spoke to said he could be Sean Livingston before he got injured. Now, to the younger fans listening, Sean Livingston coming out of high school was sensational before he got injured. And I thought that was an interesting one. And then a couple other ones were a taller version of Ricky Rubio and highlight sensation Jason Williams. I think this kid's got a nice future ahead of him. I'm curious if he's going to be a starter this year. When you look at LaMelo Ball with the Charlotte Hornets, what do you see for him in the crystal ball for 2021?
Well, I think, you know, the point that you made of will he be a starter, it seems inevitable that he will be. It's just a matter of time. I mean, you know, I know the Hornets coach James Borrego was asked about this, and, you know, he was saying it's something he has to think about. And I think that's telling that only a few games into the season, this is already a thing that he's considering when he's looking at LaMelo Ball's strong play and Devontae Graham's struggles. And, you know, I think they're, like with anything in the NBA and basketball, there is a danger to overreacting to small sample sizes and numbers. So I have confidence that Devontae Graham can improve his shooting numbers, especially from three, because, you know, he was such a good outside shooter last season. But I think philosophically, this is just a different adjustment for Devontae of him playing off the ball. And with LaMelo specifically, I mean, he's shown early signs that he has almost the complete package. I mean, even with his weird shooting form, he's a great three-point shooter. I think, you know, even though there are a few rookie mistakes here or there, his decision-making, for the most part, is pretty good. And you can't help but think, because of who he is as a rookie, that those things will just continue to get better and better. So I don't know when the trigger will be pulled, but it seems inevitable that it's going to happen sooner rather than later as far as putting LaMelo Ball in the starting lineup and Devontae Graham coming off the bench.
You know, it's funny when you're talking about a small sample size and people overreacting. I was going to say to you, let me introduce you to NBA Twitter. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
They specialize in that.
You know, I particularly love Nick's Twitter with the stop the count jokes, because they're 4-3 right now. And I don't know if you ever see the memes of them hanging the banners in MSG and first time for a winning record in a while. And I always get a kick out of that. But just to wrap up there on LaMelo and Devontae Graham, last year I thought Devontae Graham should have got more consideration for the Most Improved Player of the Year award. And, you know, when it comes to LaMelo, he's such a unique player, given his size and feel for the position. An incredibly gifted passer, makes the game fun. And I think for guys playing with him, they got to enjoy it, because he's looking to pass and make guys better. So I could see him going into the starting lineup at some point. curious when that'll be, but something to look out for in 2021. Another thing to look out for in 2021, the Chicago Bulls, as we transition. The Bulls, to me, are in an evaluation process and trying to see which of these young guys is going to be the core with the new regime, with Arturis Karnisovas taking over. One of the main guys I look at in that regard is Lauri Markkanen. You know, to my understanding and speaking with people close to the situation on this, they never got close when it came to a contract extension. They were far apart. And in a way, it was a little bit surprising because publicly, Karnisovas and Markkanen himself mentioned that they wanted to get it done. But, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I think for Lowry in this offense and with Billy Donovan, I think he's going to have a chance to have a productive season. If he can put up the numbers he did in year two, you know, this is a guy that could be one of the more sought after young free agents on the market heading into restricted free agency. When you look at Lauri Markkanen's fit with the Bulls this season and going forward, what do you say?
I like his fit. I like his potential. I mean, I think the real question mark is just his injuries and his health. You know, he's already missing a few games to open the season because of the health and safety protocols. But even before that, he had some injuries last season. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that it's far apart as far as their willingness to sign an extension. And I think when you're looking at that, each side has its own reasons for it. You know, I think from the Bulls' front, it's, you know, what's his durability? And I think from Markkanen's front, it's, hey, like, I can use this as a prove-it season to increase my market value as opposed to getting something locked in. And, you know, there is a precedent for this. You know, different Bulls' front office, but, you know, Jimmy Butler went through it in 2014 when he didn't sign his extension. Then he got a pretty good max contract after that when he got most improved player. Obviously, apples and oranges, so we don't know if marketing could be Jimmy Butler's route. But there is, philosophically speaking, I think a path for both parties to think marketing's part of the future. But I think it really comes down to how does this season play out and how healthy can he be. But I think from a talent perspective, he's really good. I mean, he's team's second leading scorer. He's a great rebounder. So the health part, I think, is the most important key here.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing for me is this kid's 23 years old. Like, he hadn't even scratched the surface yet. You know, thus far, again, early sample size to start the season, but his shooting numbers have been really good, and you know, he's been able to score the ball. So anytime you're a big guy that can stretch the floor, you're going to be in demand. So I think Lowry's going to be fine in that regard. Another player that a team is trying to determine his long-term future is Andre Drummond with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. So Andre opted into his player option. Not necessarily surprising, a high number. And given the way the value for centers has shifted over the years, you know, you see guys like, you know, Miles Turner, Clint Capella get their deals, and centers aren't getting paid what they were previously. So to me, you know, look, obviously, you know, anytime you talk about Cleveland, you know, you can talk about a Kevin Love trade and the possibility of that, sure. But to me, more of a pressing issue and a realistic one at that is Andre Drummond's future. We've seen when he was previously in Detroit, the guy can put up numbers in a contract year. The question for me is going to be how sustainable is it with Cleveland and long-term, and if it's going to affect them in the win column. They've got a young dynamic backcourt in Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. Can Drummond be that anchor? Can he be that defensive player of the year kind of guy that they hope that he can become ultimately? When you look at Andre's future in Cleveland and the crystal ball for 2021, what do you see on the horizon?
I think, and this is all relative, but I think that there is a much more realistic window for the Cavaliers to get some value for him because than they would with Kevin Love, because Kevin Love's contract is just way too big. And, you know, the idea of, you know, for Kevin's case, it would be great if he can plug himself into a championship roster. But the problem is, because of that size of his contract, any contending team is going to be giving up way too much, and they're just better off staying put. So I think, you know, unfortunately for Kevin, like, I think that this is just where he's going to be, and he has to make the best of it and see what he can do to, you know, help develop the younger guys and also just put up his own numbers. But I think that he can only go so far because he's a great offensive player, but his defense isn't always the best. I think in Andre's case, there's a little gray area because, as you noted, you know, the value of having traditional big man isn't what it was, isn't what it is now because of the modern NBA. But I think because of what we saw in last year's playoffs, where you have guys like Nikola Jokic with the Nuggets, you know, the Lakers, Anthony Davis, there still is a need to have someone that can, you know, slow those guys down and make things difficult. And so I could see a team that is in the hunt thinking, hey, you know what, like, if I want to be able to compete against those teams in the playoffs, I can't go size for size with them, but I got to at least have something so they're not having just layup lines every play down the court. And I think that that can cut both ways. If they can get a deal out of that, that's priority number one, to help accelerate this rebuild and collect assets. But if they're not able to do that and teams are just dangling like second round picks, I think that Andre can be a serviceable anchor for the Cavs long term, because I think he is a versatile player. He is, you know, adding more things to his game beyond just being a traditional big man. And, you know, it sounds like all accounts are pretty happy with, you know, his fit and what he can do with the young guys. I think the problem right here the Cavs encountered is, you know, they just didn't have a lot of games for him to play last season because of this, you know, season suspension. They weren't part of the bubble. And so their ideal hopes of having, you know, post-trade deadline as data of how this would work, it really went out the window. So this season, they have to just kind of kick the can and delay using that to see how it applies this year.
Yeah, and at 27, to me, Andre Drummond still is young enough to be a part of that long-term future for Cleveland. With the way he's kind of clicked so far with J.B. Bickerstaff, wouldn't shock me at all if they get something done long-term. Another big man worth noting, switching over towards the West now, and talking about the Dallas Mavericks, next up on our list, Kristaps Porzingis, looking to make his comeback from his injury. You know, being around Porzingis at the start of his career here in the New York area, this was a guy that was considered a potential franchise cornerstone building block. And now in Dallas next to Luka Doncic, he's got to be the Robin to his Batman. For me, and, you know, it's going to be tough for him to be an all-star in 2021, but to me, that's kind of the question now. Like, at what point is he going to be an all-star caliber player? Because he's shown flashes of it, but curious when that talent is going to materialize again. We've seen him be an all-star his last year with the Knicks. I want to see if he can get back to that level with Dallas, because if he can with Luka Doncic, then they really have two core pillars that they can lean on in that vaunted Western Conference, as you know, being out there in the LA area.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and you don't know if the Mavericks should feel optimistic or encouraged about this or feel concerned. Kristaps Porzingis' all-star ability will basically just hinge on his health. I don't think that there's any issues about his play. There was some, you know, initial learning curves with how he fit into Dallas, the chemistry, you know, with Luka Doncic for a while. You know, the beginning of his time in Dallas, a lot of the value was touted in intangibles and just great decision making. But I think it's gotten to the point now where he can post up numbers and complement Luka very well, and he accepts that role of being the number two guy. And I think that the chemistry is a perfect fit but they just need more time together. The bigger thing is what his health is going to be. I mean, the Mavericks felt like, okay, he missed a season and a half, you know, recovering from that torn ACL, you know, that he had in the Knicks, with the Knicks. You know, he had a great offseason, great summer of working. Okay, now is the time that he's rounding the corner. Then all of a sudden, during the playoffs, he has another injury, and, you know, he's out for the remainder of the bubble. And now, you know, they're really trying to handle him with care. I mean, there was a hope that, hey, he was going to open the season healthy, but then, you know, first day of media week, Rick Carlisle announces, no, like, he's going to come back at earliest in January. And you'll wonder, you know, he's just started practicing not too long ago. But the timetable with his return is going to be sometime later this month. But once, and if he gets to that point, you know, are there going to be minute restrictions? Are they going to have to phase him there? And I can't help but wonder, you know, these string of issues, is this going to be a pattern moving forward? The skills, I have no skepticism on. I think if and when he gets substantial time to play, he and Doncic, I think, arguably could be the best 1-2 duo for this next generation. But it's really going to have to hinge on how well Porzingis can stay healthy. At this point, he hasn't shown an encouraging pattern, but I think, in fairness to him, he's still a young player.
I was about to sound the alarm there for a second and get the sirens going. I don't know if that's a little bit of a hot take to say that they're, I mean, sure, they have the potential to be an incredible duo, but to be one of the best of the generation. I mean, we got to.
Not right now, but, you know, okay, you're talking 5-10 years from now. But, you know, it could also be the other way of, hey, Luka's this great star. He's going to be one of the faces of the NBA. But, hey, does he have this trusty sidekick that he can rely on? And that's the great unknown there.
On paper, I certainly could see it. I just, for a second there, I almost had to turn down the thermostat. But
I turned it down for you.
I hear you on that. You know, another guy that to me has endless upside, when you talk about a big guy that's almost like a unicorn like Porzingis, Michael Porter Jr. for me in the bubble showed not only the star potential that he has, but just I remember before he went to Missouri and, you know, before the draft and he got injured with his back, Michael Porter Jr. was a guy that a lot of people thought could be the number one pick and the top overall player just on his talent alone and his size and his dribbling ability. You know, some people compared this guy to a taller Tracy McGrady. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid. But that said, Michael Porter Jr., when healthy, as we saw in the bubble, showed that he's got real upside. So for me, as we look towards our next team, the Denver Nuggets, you know, yes, they've tried to look at moving possibly Gary Harris or Will Barton at times, whether it was the draft last year or previously the trade deadline before that to get a third star. To me, Michael Porter's that guy. And obviously, you know, in trade talks with the Rockets, sure, a guy like Michael Porter's name is going to come up. But, man, I just look at them with Jokic and Murray, and you've got your big, you've got your guard. To me, Michael Porter Jr. is that guy on the wing. I just think that if he becomes that third star, that's the X factor for them to go up against the Lakers in the West.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this year, this is what it's going to be all about. I don't think that the Nuggets are looking to, you know, change their roster per se. I think that they are carving this season out to see, can Michael Porter Jr. prove that he's capable of doing that? And I think, sure, there might be some questions about his maturity and his attitude, but when you're looking at his production itself, you know, when he missed, after he missed, you know, the entire 18-19 season, you know, following back surgery, you know, he has really risen to the occasion. I mean, especially during the seed-in play, during the season restart. And I think that the upside is there to get even more opportunities because of some of the offseason departures with Jeremy Grant and Torrey Craig. And so I think that he has the skills to do that. And sure, there might be some questions of his consistency level, his attitude, but I think for the most part, those aren't major things, and that'll just kind of sort through time because he's a young player. So I definitely see him as that third guy to complement Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic long term.
You know, I think back to doing we had him for the Jordan Brand Classic All-American game here in Brooklyn, and they would do interviews with all those guys. You know, I love when these guys are younger and they really say the it's like truth serum. I remember asking him, you know, what his goals were, and he wanted to be the best player in the league. Now, also, another fun one that came to mind was Kevin Knox told me he wanted to be a 20-point a game scorer in the NBA when he was in high school. So, you know, it's always interesting to have revisionist history on that. But, you know, I think we're in agreement, certainly, that Porter has to be the third star for Denver to take that next leap. And, you know, even if they were trying to get James Harden, yeah, James Harden would obviously make any team better. That would just be interesting with Jokic and Murray. But I don't know if they'd be, you know, to part with Michael Porter Jr., who it's such a high-risk, high-reward kind of guy. But, man, I love that potential. And, you know, certainly I remember Knicks fans screaming and booing, you know, I mean, as usual at the draft, but you know, when they took Knox, there was a little bit of that. Moving on to the next team, the Detroit Pistons, who Troy Weaver is an excellent evaluator of draft talent. He was key with the Oklahoma City Thunder in that regard. That said, this offseason, he replaced Vlade Divac as the number one executive with a passion for centers. that Mason Plumlee contract was a little bit generous. They took Isaiah Stewart in the draft, another big man, and added Jahlil Okafor as well. So, and they've got a loaded front court with Blake Griffin. For me, you know, Josh Jackson's been a nice find for them. Always a guy that had talent, just needed to have his head on right. So that's been a nice find for them so far. But, you know, big picture for me, Derrick Rose has the most trade value for them, but I know they love him with Killian Hayes and developing him. And I, you know, I've heard ownership loves Derrick Rose. So for me, can Blake Griffin be traded given that he's got one more year after this with a player option? It's a high number, obviously, but that's the big question for me in 2021. I don't know if I'd call it a resolution. I would call it more something to look at for Detroit. What do you think?
I can't see it. I mean, he has a big number. He's been injury riddled these last 4 years. I mean, I know that he had a good 18-19 season. I think he played 75 games. But, you know, when you go back to 2015-16 onward, for the most part, he's struggled to stay healthy. Even if he is an expiring contract, I don't see what the point would be for any team keeping him onward. And you hate to think that way, but it's just a reality. And, you know, I think Blake proved earlier in his career, he's more than a dunker. He's more than a highlight reel. I mean, he's a capable defender. He's established a mid-range and a little bit of an outside shot. I mean, he has those things, but I don't think that he is a missing piece for a team. I don't think he's a guy that could be a leader of a team. And a lot of it is because of his health. So I think the Pistons, sure, they'd love to trade him so they can get some things in return, but I don't see what the market is for that unless they just want to settle for scraps. So I think the best bet is just ride it out, allow him to be a free agent, and then get some cap space that way.
That 18-19 season for Griffin was, to me, sensational, carrying that team to the playoffs, and he averaged like almost 25 a game. He put the total package together, and I was just laughing at myself when you were saying about him proving that he was more than a dunker. And because yeah, he's shown the mid range and the pick and pop ability, but I think Timofey Mozgov would disagree. I'm sure he still has nightmares thinking about those dunks. But
oh yeah,
you know, Blake.
Yeah, Kendrick Perkins, Pau Gasol, the victims, there are plenty of them.
they're yeah. Holy jeez, a little just go, YouTube all day on those. But you know, we touched on Blake, and you know, comparing a little bit towards his LA Clipper days a little bit. Keeping it on the West Coast, you know, and you know this team pretty well from covering them, the Golden State Warriors. For me, looking at 2021, the biggest thing to keep an eye on is what are Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre going to be for this team long term? To me, that's the X factor for them to, I mean, obviously you want to get Klay Thompson healthy back once he recovers from his injury, but ultimately you got to make a decision on Oubre's future long term with his contract. And, you know, can Andrew Wiggins ever become an all-star? Those two things for me are the things to keep an eye on for the Warriors in 2021. So I ask you, what do you think?
Yeah, I think both players are just short-term stopgap players. You know, with Kelly Oubre, they got him because, you know, hey, they're a team that's still willing to spend. They had that trade exception from the Andre Iguodala trade. They needed wings. But, you know, his shooting is very inconsistent. I think really the realistic expectations for him is not to hit shots consistently. It is, hey, how much effort can you be offering defensively? And Andrew Wiggins, he's not ever going to be an all-star. I think he's always going to underachieve, but not to enable that and not hold him accountable. But I think just realistically, the expectation should be, how do we develop him into being just a consistent rotation guy? You know, this idea of, oh, can he finally have a breakout season where he's, you know, having an all-star kind of caliber season? I don't think it's ever going to happen. He's always going to play under his potential. And the idea of when he has a 30-point game, I don't think it's ever going to be a sign of, oh, he's turning a corner. I think it's going to be a sign of, hey, he had a great game, and then he's going to disappear the next few games. So it's more about how do they get him that there's at least consistent effort and defensive presence. And so when they made the deal to get Andrew Wiggins from Minnesota, I don't think they had any illusions that, oh, we can be the team that, you know, turns his career around completely. I think they looked at it pragmatically that they needed more wings. They thought that the D'Angelo Russell experiment didn't really work. You know, they came in getting D'Angelo with the idea to flip him anyway, and also to give them some backcourt depth because Klay Thompson wasn't going to be there this season. But they quickly realized the idea of D'Angelo being able to play off the ball was a pipe dream. And so they thought, okay, let's get some wing presence. We need that ever since Kevin Durant left. But I could also see them, you know, treating him the same way they treated D'Angelo, where it's about, you know, just trying to flip him like a house and try to get a deal. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's action on him leading to the trade deadline. But at least for this season, if that doesn't happen, it's about, hey, how do we have some, you know, reinforcements in the rotation, so it's not just on Steph and Draymond. But I don't see Wiggins or Oubre being like the proverbial third guy. So long term, I just don't see that happening.
It's funny you talk about flipping them. That'd be some real estate agent flipping that. More of a condo than a penthouse, but
yeah, exactly.
You know, speaking of flipping guys, obviously James Harden. Guy that you want to talk about flipping trade talks, he is encapsulated the news cycle for a while with his future there, and it's certainly been entertaining. It's almost like watching a daytime soap opera a little bit if you're into that stuff. But he does. I don't see right now anything substantial. You know, the Rockets, they're in a position where they're still trying to figure out even what they have there and if they can compete. Christian Wood has been sensational for them so far. In your crystal ball for 2021, is Harden moved before the trade deadline in March, or is this something that maybe could drag out to you know, NBA draft time even?
Yeah. Caveat is, as with all these things, it's fluid. So anything can happen, but if I had a guess, I think that Harden's with the Rockets the rest of the season, and then his departure happens when the season's over. You know, Harden can have a wish list all he wants of contenders he wants to play for. And if you're any team, you always do your due diligence to check into things. But I think philosophically, any contending team is just better off staying put, because to get him, you're going to have to give up a substantial part of your core. You're going to have to worry about how do you integrate James with any other star players, and what's the pecking order with that. And I think with James, you know, he's shown that it can't just be about him. That's the reason why the Rockets got Chris Paul to begin with, so that, you know, he's not wearing down during the playoffs. But the idea of James willing to be the number two guy, I just don't see it. And then I think the other end is, this is also Houston's decision. You know, they want to get something in return, number one. But number two, the way ownership has responded to things with Tillman Fertitta, like, they're a very financially driven franchise in the way that, you know, they've tried to avoid luxury taxes. And I think when you're looking at Harden specifically, even if they might just be going in circles this year, not really accomplishing much, you know, best case scenario that because they have John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and Harden's great, that they can still be a playoff team, or it's just circling the wagons. He's their best financial play. He's marketable. You know, the Rockets are having limited fans in their arena, and having Harden there helps fill those seats. So, you know, it's not always a great thing that Tillman looks through things mostly through a financial lens. But I think in this respect, he's probably thinking, look, my businesses have struggled. All these franchises have struggled, relatively speaking, compared to others in the pandemic. Like, I'm going to just squeeze this cash cow as much as I can. So I think because of all those things, he's here for the duration of the season. And then it's a matter of, okay, using the offseason to try to line up trade partners and extract as much value as you can that way.
The only way, I guess, like, if you get close towards the trade deadline, if a team feels like they're on the cusp of there's a big injury, you know, and they need to fill a scoring need, then maybe, yeah, you roll the dice and you go in on Harden and you give up those assets. But, you know, two other guys that I think are going to be worth watching in their futures as we go down the list here of teams, looking at the Pacers and the Clippers, that are also going to have some interesting eyeballs on them, is Victor Oladipo and Kawhi Leonard. And for me, you know, you being out in LA, I definitely wanted to get your take on it. But to me, with Paul George re-upping, I do see Kawhi staying there long term as of now out in LA. With Victor Oladipo, I'm not as sure. It's been nice to see him play at a decent level so far to start the season. But, you know, I'm curious with the way that the free agent market has shrunk with some of these extensions that got done. He's going to be a bigger name out there. Jrue Holiday is going to be a big name out there. And I think teams are going to be willing to spend significant amount of money to get those guys, because they're going to be the best upgrades that they can get. So Kawhi, I think, stays. Oladipo, I'm not sure. What's your take on those two?
Yeah, I'm with you, Kawhi staying. You know, the Clippers, when I've asked them after the Paul George extension, they're feeling, you know, look, they're optimistic, but they're also not naive that NBA developments can always change. In Kawhi's case, I mean, he's used player movement to his advantage. But, you know, Kawhi, unlike the time in Toronto, like, he always had a hope to come back to his hometown. And I think that, you know, there is a recipe for the Clippers to show encouraging things long term. Maybe that doesn't result in an NBA title this year, because, hey, it's a really loaded Western Conference, especially with the Lakers. But I think that a lot of the things that the Clippers had to correct this season didn't have so much to do with personnel. It had to really do from within. And Kawhi's Game 7 performance aside against Denver, like, I don't put him as much accountable as I do to, you know, to Paul George. And so, you know, barring him just, like, completely wetting the bed and giving Kawhi this thought of, hey, like, I shouldn't want to play with him long term, I think that, you know, he's there to stay. He didn't agree to an extension this year only because he wasn't eligible for it. So even if the Clippers were able to do that, or even if the Clippers, philosophically was able to convince Kawhi to do this, like by CBA rules, they just weren't allowed. So I think he's coming back. Victor Oladipo, I mean, it's inevitable he's gone. I mean, I don't see any promising signs with the way he's handled things, with just his lack of, real much public comments suggesting that he wants to be there long term, his initial, thoughts of not wanting to play in the bubble. And so I think it's just a matter of time before he's gone, whether it's before the March 25th trade deadline or, after this season. As far as the Milwaukee Bucks with Drew Holiday, yeah, they're definitely going to re-sign him. I think that, the part of the reason why they made that trade was because, hey, they want to show that they can upgrade the roster and convince Giannis to stay there long-term. They accomplished that, but also I think that how he views things beyond that also hinges on their ability to keep that, and I think that they will do everything they can to do that. And I think Holiday will want to be inclined to stay because they have a good thing going there. And I think so far the fit's been really good. So those are my three predictions with those three teams.
When it comes to Drew Holiday, I mean, I had touched on this in a story for hoopsite.com with talking with some execs, but they think this guy could even get a max contract this summer. And, again, that's only been enhanced given the extensions that happened and, Spencer Dinwiddie got hurt. So, when you're looking at the point guard position, yeah, Chris Paul could hit the market depending on what he does with his option. But Drew Holiday is the ball is they have so much leverage, as you touched on, given all the trades, the trade assets that they gave up to get him. And with Giannis extending, they are severely inclined to make sure that they retain Drew Holiday. And it's been a good fit so far. I mean, he's been a great player for them and, really made that a potential all-star trio with Giannis, Middleton, and Drew. So, this is a guy that could potentially get a max contract and a guy that a lot of execs think can get over $30 million, certainly, if it doesn't hit the full max. But he's in some great shape there. You mentioned about Kawhi Leonard not being eligible for an extension. In LA with the Lakers, a guy that is eligible to sign an extension is Dennis Schroeder. Curious if you think that gets done at some point.
I think it will. The earliest it can happen is February 16th. But I think the Lakers have kind of gone the unconventional route of, wanting to deal with long-term things earlier as opposed to later. Usually when you're having a championship window, you're just trying to squeeze everything you can with each season because you just, you're trying to protect finances. But even though they're having that window now, they're almost operating on the heels of, hey, we need to project ahead and, not allow that championship window to shut before we suddenly have all these assets that we have to worry about. Hence why they extended LeBron when they technically didn't need to, and why they were able to convince Anthony Davis to sign a longer term deal. And so I think that's a trickle down effect. I don't think that they're having this attitude of, hey, like, just because we have LeBron and AD, be happy with being here and we'll just deal with things at the end of the year, because the fact that they did an extension with Kyle Kuzma leads me to believe that they'll do the same thing with Dennis Schroeder. And frankly, when they were negotiating these deals with Oklahoma City to get Schroeder, I mean, Rob Pelinka had conversations with Schroeder's representatives about his role. And, it came out that, he got assurances that he would be a starter. So I think that he is going to get an extension before the end of the season, but then it's just a matter of, how much the number is going to be. And right now, both sides haven't agreed to anything, but I think it will happen before the off season hits.
And, we touched on, excuse me, we touched on Drew Holiday going to the Bucks, and, and with Giannis re-signing, Giannis was a guy that obviously the Miami Heat, among other teams, you know, the Toronto Raptors, the Dallas Mavericks, were keeping an eye on towards making a big run at in the summer of 2021. That's not going to happen now. So when you look at the Miami Heat, I wonder if who's the next star target that they can try to go after. Obviously, they did a lot of these short-term deals again with, you know, Myers Leonard, Goran Dragic, etc. And, you know, Kelly Olynyk is going to come off the books as well. They're going to have plenty of cap space to do damage. I'm curious who their next star target could be. Is it Victor Oladipo, possibly, a guy that, you know, reportedly had some interest in going there eventually?
Yeah, this is just my opinion. It's not like, you know, this is coming from the Heat in any way. I would put Oladipo and DeMar DeRozan as the targets. Now, the good thing about the Heat is I don't think that they have to go free agent big game hunting like, you know, the Knicks would try to do and then strike out. They have a really good thing going, but I think both players could complement Jimmy Butler really well from the scoring end and also reduce a little bit of his workload. And they have the assets to get those guys if Indiana, you know, decides, hey, like, it's better to try to get some sort of value before, you know, the offseason. Same thing with San Antonio. I mean, one of the priorities that San Antonio should put at the top of the list, and it's easier said than done, but trade DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge and get whatever you can, because right now, with those two players, and I think more LaMarcus than DeMar, they're just giving the Spurs empty calories. You know, sure, they're gaining them a few wins here or there, but, you know, they're also kind of getting in the way of the youth development. And so the Spurs should be trying to collect whatever assets they can with those two players, because there's no future for them once they hit the open market next summer. But from the Heat's end, DeMar would be, I think, the number two, and Oladipo would be number one.
You know, the other thing, too, is, and this gets lost in the shuffle a little for a sec, but James Harden is a guy that, you know, Miami could target in a trade. And, yeah, you know, they don't want to give up Duncan Robinson, and you don't want to give up Tyler Hero or certain guys. And it's like, well, you know, you got to give to get. And, I mean, he's a guy that is worth it on paper, obviously, a scoring champ and a guy that's an elite player. You know, for Oladipo, I would just try to go get him in the offseason. I wouldn't try to give up a ton of assets for him. I know they're very high on Duncan Robinson and shooters get paid. You know, I don't want to skip over, you know, briefly the Memphis Grizzlies as we're going through the list. You know, losing Ja Morant and to injury right now, and with Jaren Jackson being out, you know, them being a team that I thought, you know, last year really surprised people as a team that competed for a playoff spot as close as they were. It'll be interesting to see if they really fall back and are more of a higher lottery team this year now because of Morant's injury, if it's almost better for them long term because they get a high pick and a guy that can be maybe the third piece with those guys going forward. And I also like Brandon Clark as well.
Yeah. You know, the caveat with this season is that, you know, there's so many things that can happen with other injuries or, you know, infections with other teams. But, you know, he's out at least 3 to 5 weeks. That's a good chunk of games. And, you know, the Grizzlies are going to be struggling to get wins with any of those during that time. And the thing was, even before Ja Morant's injury, I didn't project them to make the playoffs because I thought Golden State was going to be on the rise with now that Steph and Draymond are healthy. I think the Suns are going to get another seed, and I think the Pelicans. So I think that they were going to fall just by default there, but still be, you know, competitive, like 9, 10, 11. So here, it almost seems inevitable, you know, barring a quick return or just severe injuries to other teams, it seems inevitable that the Grizzlies are going to be in the lottery. So, you know, that's not to say right now that the Grizzlies should be in tank mode and just coaching that way as far as how you handle guys' minutes. But at some point, it'll reveal itself. And you know what? Like, when it comes to teams tanking or whatever, like, things kind of work out naturally. Like, you don't have to have this preconceived plan to do it. Like, you're losing the reigning rookie of the year, your best player, for 3 to 5 weeks. Like, that'll kind of just take care of itself.
Yeah, organically. And I mean, you know, we were talking about high lottery, you know, potential finishes. And I mean, you know, you look what happened with the Timberwolves, and they end up with the number one pick. And, you know, Anthony Edwards could be a rookie of the year candidate. That's something for me to look out for them in 2021. What say you?
Yeah, he certainly has to be a candidate. You know, he started off really well. He was the number one pick for a reason. I just think that James Wiseman's going to get it because of the fit in Golden State. And it seems like because of the role that he's being asked to play, like, that's just going to continue to get better and better. Where now that Draymond's back, you know, he's going to have less pressure to bring it defensively, but he's also going to have, you know, more comfort and accountability with having Draymond on the floor. And I think that early on, there seemed to be a very clear shift that they're trying to groom him to be the third guy because of the inconsistency with Wiggins and Oubre. And so it hasn't gotten to the point where they're drawing up plays for him or anything like that. Like, he is still, you know, his value is more about what he's doing defensively and just setting screens for Steph and getting putbacks. But I think at some point, with more playing time, his offensive numbers are going to increase a lot. And so I think that he's going to get rookie of the year, but that's not, you know, what I'm saying has nothing to do with anything negative about Anthony Edwards. I think that tandem with him and D'Angelo Russell and Towns can be really good. And because D'Angelo, he's clearly like the guy in the backcourt, I think that there is going to be an easier adjustment for him as opposed to when, you know, he was trying to play with Steph Curry last year when he was with the Lakers, you know, and he was navigating, okay, how do I play with Kobe during his farewell? Clearly it's D'Angelo running the show, and he's a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands. And I think Anthony can work off the ball pretty well with it.
Yeah, D'Angelo can score off the ball, get a couple of, you know, coming off screens and shooting off the catch and shoot. He can do that, but I definitely agree with you. He's better with the ball in his hands. Transitioning to the next guy I want to touch on with the ball in his hands, Lonzo Ball with New Orleans. To me, this year for them is all about finding out if he can be the long-term answer at point guard. And he's another guy that's set to cash in after they couldn't get a contract extension done. He's got a really high cap hold too when you look at this summer. I mean, for him, his qualifying offer, excuse me, is about $14.4 million. That's a lot. So I wonder if he either takes, you know, depending on what the market brings, maybe takes that QO and then hits unrestricted free agency the year after, or if he's able to get a high offer sheet and force the Pelicans' hands. We'll see what Rich Paul can come up with his agent. But to me, looking at New Orleans, that's the question for them in 2021.
Yeah, I think that the question for both the Pelicans and Lonzo is, you know, what's the number that they feel he's worth? And so that question philosophically, is Lonzo the long-term point guard answer? I think he is, depending on what your expectations are. I don't think that Lonzo is going to become this, you know, premier all-star every single season. You know, maybe he'll make an appearance at some point in his career, but I think that his future in his NBA career is he's going to be a solid player. And sure, there's room for improvement. He's improved his shot, but I don't think he's going to become, you know, this consistent all-star. I think long-term, it's very clear that it's all about the tandem with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. Like, those are the guys on the team. And there's still a lane for Lonzo to be that guy if he's willing to just be seen as this dependable point guard that makes solid plays. But if he's looking at, hey, I want to get, you know, paid really well, I want to be seen as the guy on the team running the show, then yeah, his future's not in New Orleans. So, you know, part of that is going to be what this season entails. And I think that that's why, you know, both sides thought, hey, like, let's not agree to an extension. I think there's a reason the Pelicans did it. And I think there's a reason Lonzo did it, that, you know, I think Lonzo sees his value being high. And I think the Pelicans are, you know, they're not souring on him. They like him, but they also just kind of want to see, okay, what are we exactly working with here? So I could see it long-term. If it is just under the guise of he's the third guy and he's a serviceable point guard, but nothing beyond that.
You know, it's in keeping it in the backcourt and transitioning to the Knicks, they were a team that one of my colleagues, Yossi Goslin, our salary cap guru at hoopsite.com, thought was a potential fit for Lonzo. But that was before the Emmanuel Quickley train came in. Full steam, you're talking about like express route. This kid has come in and, you know, I don't think I've seen Tom Thibodeau have a man crush on a rookie like this in a long time. And he smiles every time he talks about Emmanuel Quickley. And every time he says like he's learning something quickly, he smiles at his own puns with that. It's adorable. And Nick's Twitter, you know, listen, Emmanuel Quickley has been awesome so far. You know, that said, I mean, they're, you know, already trying to get their tickets for his Hall of Fame speech on Nick's Twitter. But to me, Emmanuel Quickley, I think that's really, to me, it's about as much as they're getting some great production out of Julius Randle, and you got to see what Obi Toppin is. To me, the most intriguing storyline for the Knicks in 2021 is, can Emmanuel Quickley be their point guard of the future? This is a guy that was a standout at Kentucky, and he's been balling. And if he is, then that changes the dynamic for the free agent market, because then the Knicks wouldn't be looking at it as many point guards as maybe some people thought, you know, coming into the season with their just, I don't even know what to call it, surplus of point guard. We'll go with that, with Neal Aquina, Dennis Smith, and Elfrid Payton. But Quickley's really taken off.
Yeah, Quickley's the real deal. And I was really pleasantly surprised that he's done this, considering the fact that, you know, he had an injury with his hip pointer. And so, you know, he had his debut, he got hurt, he missed a few games. But when he came back, you know, beyond just, hey, needing to shed some rust, like, it didn't look like he missed a beat whatsoever. And he seems to have the complete package. And I know it's early. I know he's young. So, you know, teams are going to scrutinize him more on the scouting report. And there will be a wall he eventually hits. But I think that, you know, he has the learner's mindset. And he has a lot of different tools that show that, hey, he has a fundamentally sound base. So now it's just a matter of, you know, because he has a good foundation, that he'll just keep adding layers to it.
Last thing I would say on Quickley, Tom Thibodeau said he's really talented, smart, great worker, loves his attitude and approach. He's going to be a really good player in this league for a long time. Quote Tom Thibodeau, guy's been around. If he says it, I believe it. Guy knew something about Jimmy Butler. You know, speaking of young guys that have played well, he was a draft pick that so far has been a hit for the Knicks. Another guy that has a ton of draft picks coming up in the future is Sam Presti, the general manager of the Oklahoma City Thunder. To me, I think he's looking at the draft kind of like Pokemon. You got to catch them all.
Yeah.
How many more draft picks can this guy get in 2021? To me, that's just what I'm looking forward to seeing with the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2021. Sure, you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and all that, but you know, it's like Pokemon. Got to catch them all.
Yeah, I know people in the Thunder organization have definitely joked that it's their goal that they have pick 1 through 30 at some point between the 2021 and 2027 draft. And it's scary to think. They have 18 first-rounders and 11 second-rounders between those 6 years. So they are going to be a team to be reckoned with. And, I don't think they're going to get to the point of trading Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, they still want to have some young talent they can develop. And I'm struggling to think, okay, what other deals can they make? Because it feels like they've made all of them. But knowing how Sam Presti is, I wouldn't be surprised if he somehow gets more picks. I mean, he got 4 first-rounders this offseason. He got 6 second-rounders this offseason as well. But maybe he feels like the job is done and now it's just about developing young guys, and maybe with the development that can lead to more trade value into the deadline there. But, I don't want to say he can't get any more picks, but I feel like he's already done all his work. He could sit back and kind of let the season play out.
You know what? I think you were underselling it. I know they want just 1 to 30. You know what? Let Adam Silver, Mark Tatum take the night off. Go announce the whole draft. Go ahead, Sam Presti.
160. Wow.
Have a day. Why not? Sure. I mean, hey, I mean, obviously they're not going to get that many picks, but my goodness. It's just crazy. Next team up on the list as we head towards the finishing touches, the Orlando Magic. To me, I don't know. I guess like Evan Fournier's future to me is kind of the interesting question, because, you know, with Mo Bamba not really showing you much and him having to deal with the COVID, you know, Vucevic, I don't see them moving him. You can't really move Aaron Gordon right now with Jonathan Isaac out, and you need to see how he comes back. So to me, Fournier's future there long term is going to be interesting. And, you know, Terrence Ross has proven to be a capable scorer if he left.
Yeah, I don't think Fournier is there long term. Just from a number standpoint, I mean, I think, you know, even short term, you know, he's had some inconsistency. I mean, his defense isn't really bad, really good. You know, his scoring, he gets the numbers, but, you know, sometimes, you know, he's taking ill-advised shots. So I think the ideal is that they get something, you know, for him before the trade deadline. So they're not just stuck in that 8th playoff spot all the time. But at the same time, like, he is short term their recipe for, you know, getting some wins here. But I think that definitely he's not here long term. But then, you know, this season, it's just a matter of what can they get in the trade deadline. Is it worth it, you know, for what they can get long term?
Next up, Philadelphia on the list. To me, it's just simply put, is this the year that they take the next step? And I love what I'm seeing out of Ben Simmons. I think you've got a longer ceiling if you keep it him and Joel Embiid versus making a trade for Harden right now.
Without a doubt. And look, I look at the East as wide open. You know, if I had to handicap it, I had going into the season Milwaukee, Miami, and Brooklyn over them, but anything can really happen. And you can switch that order around and put Philadelphia at the top. And so far, they've been that way. And I think what's encouraging is, you know, Doc Rivers is a really good coach. B, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons have good chemistry to start out. And C, I think there's just a lot of good depth with their scoring, their rebounding. They have some better outside shooting now with Seth Curry, so that's going to help open the floor up for things. And I'm with you. Like, I thought when James Harden initially was trying to, you know, get traded, I thought, oh, okay, it's just a matter of time that Daryl Morey picks him up because he loves Harden. And there have been questions about Ben Simmons' fit with Joel Embiid, but I think that more time has passed. I've gone the other way. Like, A, I don't see Tillman Fertitta wanting to do a deal with Daryl Morey, number one. But number two, I think even if Daryl likes Harden, I think he's better off staying put with what they have. And that's, you know, that goes back to our discussion earlier with Harden. Like, when you're looking at these championship contending teams and it comes down to what are you willing to give up, I think a lot of these teams are thinking, you know what, I'm better off with what I have. And that's, you know, that includes Philadelphia.
Yeah, the other big thing, Doc Rivers coming in changes the dynamic, showing them how to win. And it's early. And again, I just want to stress that. I know it's early. But you saw what the peak was with Brett Brown. Now you're getting a chance to see with Doc. and you got to give him time to work with those two guys and see what you have there. And again, I think their ceiling long term is better with those two than making a trade for Harden. You know, we talk about whether James Harden is a difference maker for the Sixers. Chris Paul has been a difference maker for the Phoenix Suns. Chris Paul, despite not, you know, winning a championship yet, has proven in his career that he is a winner. You look no further than what he did with the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that was projected for the lottery, and what he did to get them to the playoffs as the leader. I think the bigger thing for me, he's a good fit in Phoenix. For me, the question I have for 2021, is he the next Gordon Hayward? And what I mean by that is, does he opt out of his $40+ million player option, I want to say it is, to get a long-term contract now if he can stay healthy? Because he's proven that he can be a fit there. And, you know, him and Devin Booker form a dynamic backcourt. To me, that's the biggest question for the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I don't see it. I've loved Chris Paul with the Thunder, great fit in Phoenix, but his last big contract has already happened with Houston. I mean, he's 35 years old, and so I think moving forward, you know, just knowing how players are, even if Chris is doing all the right things, I mean, he's only a few seasons removed from having a hamstring injury and, you know, having different injuries when he was with the Clippers. That's not to say it would happen again, but I think, you know, moving forward, he can, you know, he still has a future in staying in the league, but I think it's all going to be short-term deals, because I don't think any team wants to get stuck with that poison pill of all of a sudden we have a guy on the tail end of his career and he has a major injury. But I think what he showed in Oklahoma City and what he's now showing in Phoenix are two things. One, he still has a lot of game left, and B, the best scenario for Chris is to be with a young team, because A, like, there's not going to be any worries of personality conflicts like he had with James Harden or Blake Griffin with the Clippers. So there's more of a receptiveness, you know, from young players, because they know that Chris Paul does a lot of great things as far as taking care of his body and having such a sharp basketball IQ. And then the other thing is, he can help really accelerate that. I don't want to even say rebuild, because the Suns are a playoff team now. Getting a young team to that next step, whether it's a lottery team now being respectable or a respectable team now trying to make the playoffs. So I think the Suns would want to keep him, but not, you know, sign him to this huge contract, because that would eventually just wind up hurting them in the long run.
You know, it's interesting. People thought he couldn't get traded with a big contract. Got traded twice. So.
That's a fair point, but I think at the same time, that was under the guise of, you know, with the Thunder, they could flip him at some point, or they keep him for a season and build that bridge, and then look what happened now. They trade him and got more assets in return. So I think that's a little bit different than, you know, doing a long-term commitment.
My thing with Chris, just to close on him, $44.2 million is a lot to turn down. I just think it depends on the number, because if he can get, you know, let's say, you know, 30, I'm just throwing a number out there. If you can get like $35 million each year over the next 2 years, maybe you do it, because you wouldn't get that. You know, it's just something to ponder. Obviously, we got the whole season to see, but it's something to worth keeping an eye on for the Phoenix Suns. Keeping up with the guards in the West, we go to Portland. I think this is the year that CJ McCollum has a chance to finally become an all-star if he keeps up his hot play. This guy has not been an all-star yet, which is kind of surprising if you think about it, with how good Portland's been. And, you know, him in that backcourt is one of the top scoring tandems for years with Damian Lillard. Think this is the year he becomes an all-star finally?
Possibly. I mean, I think CJ McCollum is one of the best guards in the league, but it's a matter of what you're looking at here in the West. You know, pencil in Harden as an all-star, Steph Curry, pencil in Lillard, pencil in Luka Doncic. You know, the other guard candidates are Paul George, DeRozan, Devin Booker, Jamal Murray. So I think with that, I could see McCollum and George kind of jockeying for which one's the better player. And so with that, I mean, I think that, you know, if I'm CJ McCollum, sure, I'm using it for motivation of, hey, I didn't make an all-star team yet. But with these things, I also get a little leery of that narrative, because specifically with all-stars, like, it's the coaches that vote for the reserves, you know, the starters. It comes down to that mix of the fan vote, the media vote, the player vote, but it's the coaches that are dictating, like, who are the all-star snubs, right? Because of the reserves. So I think that he could get that, but it's just there's a lot of good Western Conference back guards, and you automatically have to plug in Harden, Curry, Lillard, and Doncic off the bat. And so then it's a matter of, where does he fit in with those other candidates, with PG and Booker and Jamal Murray and maybe some others.
Yeah, that's probably why Drew Holiday's happy to be in the East. Maybe he can actually become an all-star.
Exactly. And, in McCollum's case, he doesn't have to worry about Westbrook, like, whether you like Westbrook or not. Like, he was at least getting numbers all the time, and that's one guy off the board.
Speaking of other guards in the West, Sacramento Kings, you got De'Aaron Fox's dad, you got Marvin Bagley's dad, Buddy Hield's dad, Rashawn Holmes' mom. I would say that, I don't know if you remember Steve Urkel, but this is the new version of Family Matters now in the NBA. Yeah. the tweeting parents of the Sacramento Kings. Unbelievable. That's what I'm just keeping an eye on for them so far in 2021.
Think about Luke Walton. Like, he dealt with LeVar Ball chirping, not on Twitter, but just, you know, on TV and interviews about his son and Lonzo when he was with the Lakers. I mean, this stuff is nonsense. And look, like, you saw a little bit with De'Aaron Fox, like his tweet that it doesn't take Einstein to connect the dots of, you know, he's beside himself that his dad would, you know, be part of the conversation of, hey, should the Kings trade Marvin Bagley? Like, players get zero respect when their parents are popping off. And I know that for a fact, because I remember when I was covering the Lakers 2012-13 season, and there, you know, there was always all this drama with Dwight and with the team and with Kobe Bryant and everything. And his dad wound up giving an interview to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, because, you know, that's part of its hometown. And he was saying how, you know, Dwight's unhappy and he and Kobe and Mike D'Antoni need to have another meeting. And I just remember how beside himself Kobe was and Mike was, and how embarrassed Dwight was that they had to answer questions about what his dad had to say. Like, this isn't junior high and high school. Like, this is the NBA. So, like, if I'm an NBA player, I'm telling any parent to shut the you-know-what up about anything, about, like, anything on social media, anything about interviews. Like, do not talk about, like, what team should be doing or what my role is. Like, that's just nonsense. It's embarrassing.
I agree with you. And Marvin Bagley wants a trade, supposedly, or his dad wants a trade. All right, cool. Guess what? If you're not putting up numbers, kind of makes it hard to do that from the team perspective.
Also, handle it internally.
Well, not only that, you think they're not kicking themselves? Like, we could have had Luka Doncic. Like, that'll always, like, blow my mind that Vlade Divac and Vivek Ranadive, that they didn't end up with Luka Doncic. Think of, just because of the international ties, and I was surprised. But then again, stranger things happen. I mean, look, they felt like they needed a big, and Bagley was productive. But I just, looking back on it, like, you know, I forget Marvin Bagley's dad's name, but it's like, brother, you think, like, they're not looking at this like, killing me, Smalls. And then, you know, we touched on him as a possible trade guy. You know, we touched on Aldridge and DeRozan moving on now to the Spurs. I agree with you there. I think if anything, you're trying to move Aldridge more than DeRozan, because DeRozan, he's still young enough where he can give you another good two, 3 years if you get him on a short term deal, even if you pay him more. But I agree, like that, they got to go into a full rebuild mode. Look, the ghosts of Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili aren't walking through the door anymore. It's time for a rebuild. You know, congrats. You had two decades of infinite success overall and sustainability. Now you just got to rebuild it. It's just time. Father Time catches up with all of us.
Without a doubt. And yeah, Aldridge is 35. He's not really doing anything defensively. Whenever he scores, it's just empty calories. So yeah. And yeah, I think to your point, DeRozan, it's less consequential if he's still on the team. He's a good serviceable player. I think he's a great team guy. Like, so there's nothing wrong there, like that he's causing issues being there, but it's more the idea, to your point, of, you know, devote fully to moving on to the next chapter and start getting assets, developing the young players they have, and see where that goes.
Empty calories. It's like sweet and low, folks. That's all it is.
Yep.
Last three teams, Raptors, Jazz, and Wizards. For the Raptors, for me, Kyle Lowry's future with the team, and how can they improve now with Giannis not being the top free agent target for them? What are they going to do there? For the Jazz, just can they take the next step now that they've locked up Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell? And for the Wizards, it's going to be the Bradley Beal trade watch, depending on how they do. You know, if they need, you know, they I've heard, as far as Washington goes, I think there were some in that organization that felt that they could be a top, you know, maybe a six seed if things clicked. So for those three teams, that's what I'm looking at. What do you think as we wrap up the 2021 crystal ball for all 30 teams?
Yeah, I mean, this year for the Wizards, it goes without saying that this is all the trial run of, okay, we trade John Wall, you know, to adhere to his demands. How does Beal look under him? The fit with Westbrook is a lot easier because I think they could complement each other well. And, you know, the Wizards have had a very rocky start, but both of those guys are getting numbers. So now it's a matter of, okay, can those guys now lead to them getting better wins? And the burden doesn't just fall on them per se. I mean, they need help, but it's the idea that we were talking earlier, like empty calories. Like there needs to be a correlation of their really stellar play, you know, leading into long-term things. But, you know, it is early, but I don't think that the Wizards at this season are going to be trading Bradley Beal. I think it's about, okay, here are the keys to you and Westbrook, and let's see where it lands. And then, you know, when the season ends, then they'll deal with how they evaluate how it all went. With Utah, I mean, the West is loaded, so you never know, like, where they rank. But I think, you know, well, I do know where the West ranks. It's the Lakers, Clippers, and everyone else. So where does Utah fit, like, 3 through 6? I think it's up in the air, but I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, any decisions that the Jazz need to make. I think what they have is the right formula. They have Gobert, you know, with that extension. I think that he can prove that he's not just an 82-game player, that he can also be that guy in the playoffs. I think Donovan Mitchell's going to just continue to grow and be one of the elite guards in the NBA. So they got him long-term. And I think that one of the things that the Utah Jazz have in their favor is they have continuity. You know, they have, you know, guys like Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson. They got Derek Favors back in the fold. I think Quinn Snyder's an excellent coach. So, you know, that's not to say they're going to be a championship contending team, but I think that they can certainly go past what they did before in the bubble, where, you know, the Denver Nuggets caught the best of them with squandering that 3-1 series lead and them showing how great they have with their continuity and their emergence with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. So they can certainly get past last year's stage, but I still don't think it's enough because of both LA teams. And as far as the Raptors, it's very tough. Like if I'm the Raptors now, like I don't think it's to the point that they need to see what they can get in Kyle Lowry. It's more about how do they improve from within with getting Pascal Siakam, you know, getting his stuff together and just seeing how they can offset the departures of Ibaka and Gasol. But I think if I'm the Raptors, I'm putting it more on Lowry's court of what does he want than what they do. Because if Lowry is at the point of, hey, I don't have trust with where this is going, I want to go to a contender, okay, then let's see what assets we can get. But I think that the Raptors are still better off keeping Lowry because of just the intangibles he provides, complimenting Fred VanVleet, and then just going from there, as opposed to, hey, trading a franchise pillar and starting over.
It'd be interesting to see if VanVleet, you know, as the full-time point guard without Lowry, what he could do on a sustainable trajectory if that ends up being the case. But, you know, Mark, I mean, we talked about empty calories. We joked about it with Aldridge and DeRozan. Not a lot of empty calories here. This was a pleasure going around the league with you. I appreciate you coming on to break it all down for 2021, my man.
Yeah, man, it was a joy talking hoops with you, and a big fan of the pod, so honor I was able to be on.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you for coming on once again, and I also want to thank everyone for tuning in as well. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from players, coaches, executives, and fellow media members such as Mark, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're also following Mark Medina as well on Twitter, MEDINA. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.